A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on July 18, 1993, entitled, Something's Happening. The scripture readings are Esther 4, verses 9 through 17, and Mark 9, verses 33 through 41. The texts for the sermon are Esther 4, verse 14, and Mark 9, verse 40. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
The story of Esther is a wonderful story. It might be called a historical novel. It probably has a certain historical core around which has grown this marvelous story full of drama. It's a great plot. I'm waiting for Arnold Schwarzenegger to get a hold of this story. I think he could really do something with it. I was thinking about casting that. I think for Mordecai, I would choose Clint Eastwood. He's kind of grumpy and clever and not showing any emotion, sort of sitting in the background, you know, organizing all this stuff. And, well, for Esther, how about Whitney Houston? I was always hoping she would always love me. Well, anyway, it is a wonderful story. And I pull it out about every 5 years or so, but usually I pull it out when I'm dealing with God and providence and history and some of those themes. And I have to admit that when I really got serious yesterday, I thought, why in the world did I choose that scripture? And what was I thinking about? I do that in advance, you know, and it's kind of like the birthing process, I think. You go through great labor pains, and then suddenly there's illumination, and I'm all excited, and I write it down quickly. But at this age, those things don't stay with me as long. And so I get down to the real thing, and I say, what in the world was in my mind? And I thought and thought and thought about that. And then finally it began to come back again. It's because something's happening in our world. Now, something's always happening in the world. But sometimes there's more happening than other times. And what I like about the story of Esther is that it is such a wonderful, dramatic story of the faith of the people of God who believe that God is engaged in the things that happen in our world. It's that kind of involvement, engagement of God that you can't put your finger on. I say God is involved or God is engaged, and that's rather ambiguous, and I do that intentionally because I don't know how to spell that out. But the people of God, biblical people, have always believed that what is happening in the world has another dimension and there's more to it than meets the eye. Something's happening and God is involved. And that's true in our world today. So many things happening. There's so much ferment. It's a very exciting time in which to be alive, and then for some it's a very frightening time, kind of scary. For some it's threatening, but for others challenging. But for all of us, we live in a spectacular period of the human drama. And what I want to say to us as the people of God, as the church, is that something's happening. And will we or will we not be a part of the purposes and the program of God as the agents of reconciliation that are trying to move the world toward community and shalom? You see, that's so clearly in this story of Esther. something was happening. The people of God, to whom God had pledged God's faithfulness, are threatened. And so, when Mordecai learns of it, Mordecai says to Esther, do something about it. Something was happening, and Mordecai believed that what was happening on the historical plane was not apart from the involvement of the eternal God who had pledged God's faithfulness to this people. And Mordecai also believed that what was happening would eventuate in the effecting of God's purposes. Mordecai was one of those Jews that believed that God's purposes would prevail. He wasn't biting his fingernails. He wasn't overly anxious. He simply believed that God's purposes would prevail. He also was one of those people that believed that God's purposes might be affected through a particular person or a particular movement. He said to Esther, who knows but what you've come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Because she had naturally said, I'm scared. I can't just go into the king until he calls for me. I take my life. I'm in peril. Mordecai says, Esther, just maybe you are where you are for just such a moment. And then there's this too in the story. It takes commitment at great risk to be an agent for the effecting of the purposes of God. All of those things are so beautifully narrated in this story. And the reason, I think, back sometime in the misty past, I was thinking about that story and this message, is that it's a word to us as Christ community. It is a word to us who believe that in this exciting, scary day in which we live, God is engaged. We live in the aftermath of Pentecost. The Spirit of God moves across the face of the earth. And what is happening in our day is not apart from the engagement of the eternal God. And more than that, as we think about ourselves as Christ community, we really believe that God's purposes will prevail. And so the question comes to us, might God have brought us together for such a time as this? Is there something about this strange community called Christ community that we characterize as an alternative to church as usual, that might simply be at the right place, at the right time, to be an agent for the effecting of the purposes of God and the power of the Spirit? And if that might be the case, would we be willing to take the risk and to commit ourselves to such a common mission? Well, no one would deny that something's happening in our world. My goodness, it boggles the mind. I picked up a book from a dear friend this week. That's what I need, one more book. Well, really, she gave it for the church library, and it'll get there eventually. But I opened it up, and I began to skim through it, and it was full of interesting data. It's called Racing Toward 2001. Do you know that we're less than 90 months away from the 21st century? Now, as God counts years, I don't imagine that the move of a century or the shift of a millennium is any great shakes, but psychologically, it's going to impact us. It's already beginning to impact us. That's a significant time shift. We are on the threshold of century 21. And this book begins to lay out some of the characteristics of this fantastic world of which we're a part. The discoveries of which and the technological breakthroughs of which are only beginning to be felt, but will impact us and will transform the face of the earth. It blows my mind. Let me just give you an instance. One chapter speaks about century 21 as the information society. And I read there that in the old copper wire that transmits our telephone conversations, an old copper wire can transmit 24 conversations simultaneously. That's not bad for copper. But we are in the world of fiber optics, filaments of glass that have a super ability to conduct, transforming energy into image, moving light at lightning speed, so that a single fiber optic can transmit not 24 conversations simultaneously, but 16,000. Isn't that amazing? And I, who am addicted to books, I learned that on a 3.5-inch disc can be stored, recorded, 1,000 volumes. I looked at my 3,000-plus volume library and thought, well, I guess nobody's going to be able to get anything out of this when I'm gone. Such a disc, about $10, 1,000 volumes. You could have a 100,000-volume library in your desk drawer. Amazing. This Bible, plus the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now that's a lot of stuff. Could be transmitted around the earth in 2 seconds. Can you even imagine that? Well, that's just one aspect of this age of which we are a part, the implications of which will continue to increase exponentially and impact our human society. For example, the stuff that we live with every day. The reality of the world religions, the whole situation of pluralism. I mention it every once in a while. Sometimes I think maybe you say, well, we've heard that. You've heard it, but we have not begun to reckon with it. The globe, as I said last week, has become a grapefruit. And the world peoples have become a family. We simply cannot any longer live in indifference to what is going on half a world away. We are fully cognizant of much more than we ever wanted to know. But it's not a choice. It is a reality. It is a fact. And in a world where the great religions of the world are in adversarial posture, where the respective fundamentalisms of the world religions are at each other, we have a volatile situation in which it will be incumbent upon people of goodwill and the faith communities to engage in dialogue and conversation in order that we might share a common goal and dream for building community rather than living in the awful threat of terrorism and some of the horrible things that have happened in the all too recent past. Multiculturalism, for some on the left, kind of the new N-word. For some on the right, a term that brings out animosity. But for all of us, simply a reality. The United States of America has always been driven by immigration, as a United Methodist report mentions. But formerly it was Europe and Africa, now it's Latin America and Asia. And there is a rising tide of multiculturalism, which is the reality of the human drama in the society of these United States of America of ours, as well as around the world. There is not a major ethnic group anywhere in the world that is not now being represented here in more and more significant numbers. Multiculturalism is a reality. The old melting pot is being challenged by some. They're saying we are rather a salad bowl. The uniqueness of all needs to have its own integrity. However that is solved, the point is multiculturalism is simply the state of the affairs of the nation and the world become a grapefruit, become a family. Gays in the military, simply the vivid present point of discussion for the whole question of homosexuality. It's on the news, on the TV, day after day after day. What will we do in the church about this issue, which has the potential for being so explosive and divisive in our society? Talk about it every other place, perhaps, but not in church, because it is explosive and divisive. But I wonder if that whole issue, which would make us say, gee, if they just go back in the closet, might not rather call us to acknowledge the diversity of the human situation so that we come to deal with that diversity. It doesn't happen through argumentation. We really only change through concrete experience. And while there are all kinds of shades to that discussion, I know that I have met people. The impact in my life has come through concrete encounter with people who never had a choice or were given an orientation. And so what does that say to me as a Christian person that would build community and tear down barriers and remove the acids that eat away at the human family? Pressing ethical questions. Abortion. There are decent, civil, Christian people on both sides of that question. And so, what are we going to do in order that we might not have bombings and threats and all of the animosity that's so characteristic of the groups that are militant on one side or the other? How can we How can we bring the posture of Jesus Christ and the sense of what true community is to that burning issue of our day? Euthanasia. Dr. Kevorkian. Very difficult issue. Tremendous implications. Needing to be handled with care. But I've talked to enough of you one-to-one to know that while those broader social issues have to be handled with great care and great thoughtfulness, I have yet to find someone that does not wish to die with dignity, to recognize that it is really an issue that we must face up to and come to terms with. Maybe the Spirit of God is pushing us, saying to us, there is a certain measure of responsibility that you must take for your human existence. I use these things as illustrations, not to claim that I or anyone else has a simple answer, but these are the kinds of issues that can divide, that can be catalysts for violence, and that break down human communication and undercut human community. Something's happening in our world. And it's not whether or not we want to choose to deal with it. It is there at our doorstep. We will deal with it one way or another. We will be agents of reconciliation to deal with it. Or we will be those who will build the walls high in order to stem the flood tide that is as inevitable to break the levee as the old Mississippi. So, somebody I was reading, really an excellent, thoughtful scholar, says, What is needed today is for a people to create a colloquy. Well, I kind of knew what the word meant. I think I've been in one or two, but I looked it up. And it simply comes from two Latin words, meaning to speak with, to have conversation, to have dialogue. And this person suggested, I think, a wonderful image. He said, you know, rather than us being in face-to-face confrontation, what we need is to be side-by-side confronting the questions and the issues. I really like that. So often, we are face to face in confrontation. How much better to stand with each other, confronting the issues. That's the gift of real deep community. Scott Peck, in his book, A Different Drummer, says that most congregations are pseudo-communities. I want to deal with that in a couple of weeks. Pseudo-communities. It means that we act just like my mother taught me to act. Don't say anything to anybody that's not nice. And if anybody says something to you that's not nice, don't let them know it. Be polite at all costs, even at the cost of your integrity. She didn't say the last thing, but he said that's pseudo-community. And it really is. And what happens to us all too often is that we seek out our own kind so that we can be confirmed in the position with which we started before we even thunk about it. So that we get communities of like-minded people over here and communities of like-minded people over here. And the community over here and the community over here face each other in confrontation and mutual excommunication, rather than staying in there side by side, honestly facing the issues, raising the tough questions, honoring diversity, granting respect and dignity to each other, and with grace, seeking to move the whole thing toward community. Shalom. This is a wild time to be alive. Something's happening. And I think that the thing we have to offer is that marvelous model of Jesus. The Gospels were written to specific communities in concrete situations, and the things that are dealt with in the respective Gospels are the things that needed to be dealt with in those particular communities. And in this case, John comes to Jesus and he says, "Hey, Jesus, there's this guy down the street casting out demons in your name, and he's not following us." And Jesus says, "Don't stop him, John, just because he doesn't belong to our group. The one who isn't against us is for us. And in fact, even a cup of water in my name doesn't go unnoticed." Something's happening. And the Spirit of God will affect the purposes of God. I wonder if we might be who we are, where we are, when we are, for just such a time as this. It is not without risk. But it just may be that God has something significant for us together. And incidentally, maybe just maybe for one of you.